Hello and welcome to another episode of the Option Plus podcast. In this episode, it's actually a recording of Twitter Space or X Space or whatever they're called these days with two interesting companies. One is 1010.1. I did an interview with Philip on this podcast from 1010.1 before. And then with people, Martin and Chairman from Firefish, which is a collateralized loans lending platform. So this space was organized by 1010.1 and we are talking about Bitcoin finance and something that you might call DeFi in other circles, but this is strictly Bitcoin only. And I talk about my book and course, which is called How to Harness the Value of Bitcoin Without Having to Sell It. I will explain about what it is about and how we can actually leverage Bitcoin without having to sell it. So I hope you enjoy this conversation and let's dive in.
All right. I think we can start gently. So thanks for joining us, Juraj and Firefish, Martin from Firefish and Sherman from Firefish. I would like to start with an introduction of Juraj, who is honoring us today with his presence.
Thank you. Should I do the introduction myself? Okay, I will do it myself. So I define myself as a hacker. I'm a serial entrepreneur. I helped start a few companies, more than 10 actually. And I got sucked into the cypherpunk meme space and I was interested in encryption, and then of course Bitcoin came and it changed the game of the cypherpunk movement. And I like to invent new things and teach people how to use these things. And one of my favorite things to talk about is collateralized loans, which can be done to a certain extent with both projects, 1010.1 and Firefish. So I've wrote about both projects in a book that I published this year, which is called How to Harness the Value of Bitcoin Without Having to Sell It. And just a quick thing, I'm also a co-founder of Institute of Cryptanarchy and Paralelna Polis, which is one of the first places in the world that was Bitcoin only and is using these technologies as basically the only way to conduct its operations. It's a non-profit, but it has some kind of market presence as well, of course.
All right. Can you tell us maybe a little more about the book you write? I think there is an online course as well.
Yes. So this one is about using collateralized loans. So basically, elevator pitch is that you are hodling Bitcoin, you are very happy, the price is going up, and then you want to buy something or enjoy your new wealth, or not enjoy but need it, whatever you want to do. And first of all, there might be a problem that it might not be the best time to sell. So actually doing the selling decision is quite hard. Maybe you want to keep exposure to Bitcoin. And also selling Bitcoin in many countries has a very set consequence, which means paying taxes. And if you don't sell Bitcoin, if you use it as a collateral for a loan, which you can also do with derivatives, then in many of these countries, it will mean that you are not selling Bitcoin, thus not paying any capital gains tax or anything like that. And you can still enjoy the value by just borrowing fiat. And what it also means is that you are shorting fiat currency. We all like to complain about how fiat currencies are very well spread shitcoins and we don't like them, but this way you can actually short them, so you can benefit from borrowing it and returning it back at a time when they already have lost purchasing power. Of course, for this the interest rate has to be lower than the inflation, which will be in the future, so it's kind of hard to tell in advance if it's going to be the case, but nonetheless, you are on the short side of a fiat currency and long side of Bitcoin, which is what most people would like to do. And reducing the tax bill to zero is also good side effect. So I teach people this in the book. The online course is basically the same thing, but with videos on how to do it. I actually do a walkthrough of a few platforms, including Firefish and 1010.1.
All right. So you're teaching people how to keep their Bitcoin while enjoying the ride of fiat to zero.
Exactly. Exactly.
Last question to complete your presentation. Can you tell us more about Parallelnapolis?
Yes, so Parallelnapolis started as Parallelnipolis, which is a Czech name for it. And it's an experiment in running whole organization only on Bitcoin. It was started by an art group that I cooperating with and member of actually. And basically, we were using Bitcoin for some of the art projects, and at some point, the artists, they're very practical, not like academics. So they said, okay, very cool, guys, you're having your hacking fun, and you'd like to, you know, talk about this Bitcoin thing, but let's actually try it first. And it was started, I think, around 10 years ago, so back then, running an organization on Bitcoin, meaning everyone had to pay in Bitcoin, everything was paid in Bitcoin. It was quite difficult. Some people even, you know, paid with their laptops from Electrum wallets because there were not such a good smartphone apps, wallets as wallets. So we were kind of riding this from very early on. We were Bitcoin users before that, but actually applying it to an organization is quite different thing. So the first Parallelnipolis was open in Prague. It's a three-story house that hosts Bitcoin Pizza Day. It hosts Hackers Congress Parallelnipolis, which is probably the only crypto-anarchist conference right now. And it has cafeteria, co-working space, and Institute of Cryptoanarchy. Then I started one in Bratislava, late 2017, early 2018 and 19. And that's where we actually had to use collateralized loans for the first time because we raised money in Bitcoin, and then the value crashed to from 20,000 to like 3,000. So we had to figure out what to do. We couldn't just wait, but we also didn't want to sell Bitcoin that crashed down. So this is one of the strategies that we used, and that's how I actually learned about this possibility and why I started using it in my own life as well, not only in business or operations of an organization. And there are a few more Parallelnipolis right now, more or less operational, but one that is really nice is, and full-time operational, all of them are nice, but full-time operational is in Košice in Eastern Slovakia. Unfortunately, in Bratislava, we closed down like a few weeks before the peak of the pandemic because we realized that we are not going to make it paying rent and not being able to be open.
All right, so you're creating mini Salvador places since years now.
Well, I would say it's even more interesting because it's really Bitcoin only. Fiat shitcoins don't work there. Well, there's an ATM, but you really can't pay even for coffee with fiat. In El Salvador, you can still pay with US dollars, but that is not the case in Parallelnipolis. So it's really going all the way, you know, how do you deal with volatility? How do you actually keep the place running? You know, you learn how many customers you lose because you bother them with some, you know, weird cryptocurrency thing that they don't understand. And it's, I think, 2/3, I would say. So then you have to figure out, you know, how to take advantage of the volatility, you know, what to do if it goes against you and so on. So I think in El Salvador, most businesses that accept Bitcoin, they actually hedge to USD. So they are not as punk. So I have to say, maybe Martin can talk about it as well, but I don't think that Bitcoin should be forced on anyone, and the way that they implemented it is kind of hardcore for me. I think that Bitcoin is for people who want to use Bitcoin. So forcing it by laws and legal tender laws and whatever is, I don't think is the way to do Bitcoin.
Yeah, it's against freedom in a sense. So thank you so much for this very complete introduction, Juraj. And now, well, I will let Martin introduce Firefish and Richard introduce 1011, two of the companies you cover in your book that is called How to Harness the Value of Bitcoin Without Having to Sell It. And yeah, guys, if you want to go.
So who's first? So I'll take the lead then. No one's jumping in. So hi, guys, and thanks for having us here. So I'm Chairman. I'm from Firefish, also known as Igor in my private life. And yeah, so we're basically with Martin, the co-founders of Firefish, which is something what we call the Bitcoin Back Everything platform. And I guess we'll go through more details little later. Maybe just a couple of words about us. You know, us with Martin, we actually spent almost 20 years in traditional finance. So before you start throwing the eggs at us, I guess, you know, we really realized, you know, that the financial system is really not working, you know, as all of us would love to. And obviously Bitcoin being on the scene with all the attributes of it, you know, we realized that, you know, there's much more that we can do with Bitcoin, and honestly really taking some of the instruments or some of the sort of paradigms from traditional finance and bridging them into the Bitcoin world. So we've started Firefish roughly 2 years ago. It's going to be 2 years ago this year with Martin. We're based in Prague, in Czech Republic, even though both of us are from Slovakia. And yeah, as I mentioned, you know, Martin was honestly actually the leader behind the idea of Firefish. And, you know, when he approached me 2 years ago, And I think until now he's using the example of myself, like, don't be like Igor, like never sell your Bitcoin, because obviously I got into Bitcoin, I think in 2015 when I got the first one, you know, bought it at 500, and I was like, wow, yeah, the price is going up, you know, so why don't I sell it? Why don't I use it in some particular way? But it was more of a speculative thing, and then only obviously after some time, you know, you realize that actually it is a very, very specific asset with a lot of benefits. So, you know, after really 20 years in London Stock Exchange and Thomson Reuters and other companies all around the world, I really realized that this is a phenomenal opportunity for not only for us, but for the world in particular. And I guess we're going to speak about it a little more. But yeah, maybe passing the word to you, Martin, for a couple of words about yourself.
Yeah, sure. Well, as Igor mentioned, like I also spent some time in a finance, and I was getting deeper and deeper in the Bitcoin rabbit hole, obviously, and ended up like working on Bitcoin full time. Such a great times. Like I would not change it for anything. But maybe I'll say a couple of words about what we are working on or what we are doing. Like we are building a Bitcoin native lending platform or Bitcoin backed lending platform that actually allows Bitcoiners to kind of lock their collateral and receive a peer-to-peer loan secured by that collateral. What I think it's useful to kind of think about is that I think like most of the people think about Bitcoin as Igor mentioned, as an asset, as an investment opportunity that they buy at some price and sell at another. And actually, it's eating up a lot of energy and your mental focus on the stuff that is not important. Traditionally, what I think that people that accumulate some value in a Bitcoin, they traditionally have the option to use the value actually only by the means of selling the Bitcoin or spending it. And well, now I think we are working on another option. To use the value that accumulates in your Bitcoin, in your asset, without selling it and using it for your benefits. I think that this is what we are doing in a nutshell.
All right, thank you so much.
Awesome. I think it's our turn, 10-10-1. Yeah, we go back way back. We've not always been called 10-10-1. We started actually as a research lab, and we researched ways to transfer atomically trustless from one chain to another, until we realized actually, let's stay only in Bitcoin. Everybody just wants Bitcoin. We also just want Bitcoin. So why leave Bitcoin? And this is when we stumbled across adapter signatures and DLCs and followed on that and made it our mission to bring self-custody as well to trading, because we found that at this time and still, if you want to work with your Bitcoin, and of course not everybody wants to, but if you want to, there is at the moment not a real alternative than to hand over your Bitcoin to some sort of custody. And in the past, there has been a lot of people being burned by this, just recently, FTX and more later on Mt. Gox and those. And it also introduces a central point of interest for attacks. So even security vulnerabilities, whatever. If Bitcoin is in custody, there is always a lot of risk, counterparty risk. And this is what we're trying to prevent with 10-10-1. We're trying to bring financial instruments like perpetual futures to self-custodial peer-to-peer trading without counterparty risk.
Yeah, I would love to add a small anecdote. I think one of the reasons why 10-10-1 is trying to build a new way, trustless way to do finance over Bitcoin is because our founder is not here today. Philippe has been a victim of Mt. Gox back in the days. So he learned the hard way how much it costs to trust a platform with your coin. Yeah, I think that's one of the main drive behind Commit, then Ichisats, and now 10-10-1. Okay, well, I think now we introduced each other, we should talk a little bit about why do financial tools need to be built on Bitcoin? Why is Bitcoin native finance so important? Is it important?
Okay, I can maybe start. So I think it is important because Bitcoin is, of course, a technology. But what is most valuable about Bitcoin is that it is a brand, and it is a very unique even among other crypto assets. The way it was created, the fact that Satoshi disappeared and basically kind of dissolved control of the protocol to everyone. And Bitcoin is based on 100% consensus. So many people have heard about mining attacks and 51% attacks, and they infer from this wrongly that some miners with more than half of the votes influence the protocol and the rules. But that is not the case. Every node actually enforces the rules, and everyone can run a node. So the consensus is more about censorship resistance than the rules. And then you have a Bitcoin community, which is very conservative. That can be good and bad, but I think in case of financial asset, that should probably or could probably become the reserve currency of the world. This is a good thing. So, for example, if someone comes and says, oh, 21 million Bitcoin, that's not enough. You know, the economy is big and we need to raise the number of Bitcoins to whatever, 42 million. What happens is they will be laughed out of the room by very toxic people. Which is, I don't know, for better or for worse, the case with Bitcoiners. And because of that, we can be sure that Bitcoin has some properties. So building on Bitcoin, on the other hand, is incredibly hard. Technology is purposefully limited in the computational capabilities. It has some sort of smart contracts. There's a Bitcoin script that actually is evaluated when you want to spend Bitcoin transaction. And most people know the simplest Bitcoin script, which is check the signature of this public key. or that matches this public key and it's made using a private key. But it can be a little bit more complicated, but it's still pretty hard to actually implement it well. And both Firefish and 1010.1 use different approaches. And I was very happy that I was at the beginning of when both of these approaches were made, because I spent some time with Firefish when they were inventing the protocol. They had a retreat and they invited me and the cryptographers on the team of Firefish. They introduced this the way that they're doing it. With 1010.1, I unfortunately have not met anyone but Philip in person, but I wrote a paper which was called, I don't know exactly how, but it was about discrete lock contracts in Lightning Channel. So this is a clever way how you can avoid an on-chain operation every time you trade with 1010.1. I know that you guys switched to DLC channels and kicked Lightning part out of it, but it's still basically the same idea. You don't broadcast DLC closing transaction, but have a replaceable state. What I want to explain is that doing it this way is very hard. You have a very limited set of primitives. So with other cryptocurrencies that have smart contract languages, you basically just write a few lines of code and you can have a stablecoin or a collateralized loan platform. And this rich expressive language attracts a lot of developers, and they actually are able to deliver these solutions faster. So we as Bitcoiners, we have to wait, because it is not as easy to do these things. There's not so much tooling there, you know. When you start using some libraries, you realize that you actually have to become a developer or maintainer of these libraries as well, because you're probably the first one that is doing something interesting that is not the standard way of using Bitcoin. So it is important that we build on Bitcoin. We have to be a lot more patient, but I think that this conservative approach and, you know, not moving fast and not breaking things is very important. One interesting, we are, I think, three Slovaks here. So I'll bring an idea of another Slovak, which is an economist also called Juraj Karpiš, who noticed a few days ago that actually Bitcoin, as the market capitalization of Bitcoin, is actually in the same order of magnitude right now as US dollar reserves. So not talking about market cap of all the dollars, including, you know, demand deposits and so on, but only if you look at reserves, which are basically paper bills, coins, and deposits at the Federal Reserve. I don't remember exactly how I think Bitcoin has to be something over $100,000 and or 130. I don't remember exactly. But you know, it's not 10x, you know, it's playing the same game. If you compare reserves, which on-chain Bitcoin are reserves, and US dollar reserves, it's playing the same game. So this is extremely important, because when you look at the market capitalization of cryptocurrencies, you get basically Bitcoin, then you get Ethereum, which is one third, and then nothing. You know, if you don't count the representations of USD, this is the thing that we can use, you know. If you, for example, I like as a cypherpunk, I like Monero, but you know, Monero is 100x smaller than Bitcoin. So it can experiment, they can play with many innovations, but we are conservative. But we can actually leverage this by, especially if we want to use Bitcoin as collateral. So Martin has a nice story about this, how Bitcoin is the best collateral.
You're touching a really important point, in my opinion, is the fact that we actually have the tools to build a financial system on top of Bitcoin without having to touch the code base of Bitcoin protocol. And that's what we do at 1010.1, and that's what they're doing at Firefish. I like it. And I think that's really important to talk about this, since today the hype is about building Bit VMs and fancy stuff, adding code over Bitcoin or new layers and etc. But anyways, Firefish, do you want to tell your vision on why it's important for the people to build a financial system on top of Bitcoin?
Well, sure. Maybe.
Oh, pardon.
Go ahead, Martin.
Go ahead, Chairman.
Yeah, no okay. worries. I'll just give you my two cents. You know, I mean, as I mentioned, maybe the fact we spend so much time with Martin in, you know, in traditional finance and then comparing it to, you know, what is possible on Bitcoin, as you I mentioned, I mean, it's really not as easy because it's in a way limited in terms of, you know, there are no smart contracts, there are no all these fancy, you know, things and tools that you can utilize, which at the same time, you know, is really playing well with the paradigm of managing risks, right? So once you make things really very complicated and very, very flexible, it's very often, you know, the case for or an opportunity for hacks and problems and you know, things like that. So for us, really coming from finance, you know, it was mostly about managing the risks, and Bitcoin really brings a couple of very important attributes. I mean, not considering the fact that, you know, Bitcoin is decentralized and global, you know, it's you don't have actually counterparty risk, which is basically the alpha and omega of traditional finance, because you always have to trust someone, you always have to sort of rely on your counterparty that they will fulfill their obligations and all that. So with Bitcoin, you know, all these things can be very easily removed. You know, we also, in terms of what we've delivered in Firefish, is basically a protocol built on layer one on Bitcoin that helps you very securely lock your coin directly on chain, meaning you do not have to trust any federation, you do not have to trust, you know, any issuer of a particular token on layer two or any other network. And that really is the key motivation for us, right? Meaning removing the risk as much as we can, making sure that, you know, your Bitcoin is obviously not rehypothecated, it's not swapped, it's not kind of converted into anything else. And surprise, surprise, I mean, I also, you know, remember times when people were saying like, hey, Bitcoin is dead, you can't deliver, you can't develop on Bitcoin anything similar compared to, you know, Ethereum or any other networks. Yet two things that are very important is that actually the tools that we have at disposal are really good enough and pretty flexible in terms of what can be delivered, in terms of the features and tools and instruments built directly on Bitcoin network. And then obviously, secondly, the point is, you know, you're not giving up your, and that's the key thing, you're not giving up the ownership of your Bitcoin, right? So you're really still staying in control. You're ultimately then using Bitcoin as a, what we say, super collateral, superior collateral, because that's the part that we brought from traditional finance, looking at Bitcoin not only as a technology, but literally as an asset that has all these very important attributes and parameters that can really make it a superior collateral and can become and should become, and we believe that it will become, the foundation of the new finance, right? So having an asset that can't be seized easily by anyone, having an asset that is really super highly liquid, traded 24/7, and especially the fact that you do not have to trust any third-party custodian. You know, all of us remember Celsius, BlockFi, and the rest. So that's what we believe, you know, is very important. And we do believe that, you know, thanks to all these attributes, Bitcoin really should become a foundational element of the future of the finance. And for us, really, the mission in Firefish is leveraging all these attributes of Bitcoin and making or helping it or leveraging it as a superior collateral for whatever reasons you or for whatever purposes and use cases you want to use it, right? So It's like, you know, we very often use the metaphor of, you know, you have a Picasso painting and suddenly you have an investment opportunity, you can buy a company, you can invest somewhere. Well, you know, you can either sell your Picasso painting and then obviously forget about the future increase in the value of that asset, or you can actually collateralize it in a very secure way, in a non-custodial way, like we do in Firefish, and basically fund the investments through a loan, right? What Yura mentioned at the very beginning, actually taking a loan is actually shorting fiat, which is, as we see, you know, in the last couple of years, a very, very solid strategy. So for us, this is definitely the path forward. I think I'll stop here, Martin. You can add your comments on this.
You're basically reading my mind. So I just wanted to add one thing that, well, I think it's very obvious that people will be using and need the financial tools that are using Bitcoin. And there are actually many ways how you can build it. And actually, you could do finance on Bitcoin without even touching Bitcoin. You could basically buy Bitcoin on Binance and take out a loan or do some derivative trade or whatnot without even touching Bitcoin. You are interacting with a platform that does something on the background, but you are pretty much not doing anything on Bitcoin. I don't need to probably repeat that this approach is having a lot of risk attached, and building directly on Bitcoin is removing most of this of such risks. So back to the original question, I really think we need to build financial tools on Bitcoin.
I think a very, very simple argument as well is that people use these tools today, but not primarily on Bitcoin because they're not there. So we need to bring them the possibilities to do that and be safe doing it, right?
Yeah, so basically people are already thinking they are Bitcoin, but actually they just use services that are custodial, and they don't own anything. They just use custodial services that promise them something. The key difference is that building Bitcoin allows for building a healthier finance where everything is auditable and where you can actually own something and be sure of the outcome of something and manage your own risk, knowing transparently where is your risk. Nice. Yeah, I realized that we should probably explain how both solution, how both application work. So Firefish, I will give you the mic back. Can you explain us really easily for a user what's the point of Firefish and how can I use it?
Yeah, I mean it's very simple in principle. So as we mentioned, Firefish is a basically Bitcoin bag lending platform built on principles of no custody, no rehypothecation, built on Bitcoin layer one. It is an open marketplace as well, where it's a peer-to-peer also actually marketplace where borrowers and investors meet. Borrowers are basically people who own Bitcoin and they do not want to sell their Bitcoin. And instead of selling their Bitcoin, they can lock their Bitcoin securely directly through Firefish protocol and receive fiat loans while using obviously Bitcoin as a collateral that is backing these loans. And on the other hand, as it's a peer-to-peer, as I mentioned, you have these investors and, you know, love it or hate it, you know, we're still living in fiat economy. So most people do have income in fiat. And we know that, you know, keeping your fiat money in a bank on a current account or term account is basically just a waste of your money. So Firefish also helps holders of fiat to invest in Bitcoin-backed loans, right? So on one side, you have these borrowers who are borrowing fiat for whatever purposes. You know, we can obviously mention some of them later. And then on the other hand, you have investors who are basically funding these kind of loans. I think what is also important to mention is that obviously, Bitcoiners, they are Bitcoin native, but investors on Firefish do not have to be Bitcoin native. So if you have a grandmother sitting on a pile of cash, you know, she can easily participate on the network because her only role would be, you know, sending the money once Bitcoin is locked to the borrower and earning an interest that is definitely much more attractive than any other money market instrument that is out there. So that's in the nutshell what Firefish is. So I would also maybe highlight the fact that we have in a way two types or two arms of the business. One is for retail, and actually today we've launched our public platform. So you know, all the guys here, feel free to join the platform, try it for yourself. We've been running it for a year, really with very, very strong traction. Obviously, Bitcoiners find this very attractive because they are not giving up the ownership of their Bitcoins. They do not have to trust anybody, any custodian. And at the same time, you know, people with free cash have an impressive opportunity to invest safely, securely with very, very attractive yields. And then, of course, we have the other arm, which is for institutional investors. And that's also one of the sort of philosophies or ideas that we were trying to bring into Bitcoin, sort of bridging the fiat world with Bitcoin world. Because previously, yes, there are other lending platforms, but you need to rely on stable coins. Again, love them or hate them. But we really wanted to kind of open up the opportunities for traditional finance and bringing institutional liquidity into the market, which is very important also for the borrowers. Because even nowadays, actually, if you look at any DeFi platforms and the borrowing rates, they're sky high, 18%, 20% for dollars, which is really crazy. Whereas, the traditional finance, the cost of money is much, much, much lower, which is something we've seen on our platform as well. So, for example, borrowing dollars or euros, we would be talking about 7 to 10% maximum, which is really great. I think from both perspectives, it's still attractive for the investors, and it's much more attractive, obviously, for the borrowers who do not have to pay twice as much. So yeah, so that's Firefish in a nutshell.
All right, Richie, do you want to put 10-10-1 in a nutshell?
In a nutshell, yeah. So 10-10-1 is the self-custodial wallet. We have multiple use cases that we used to and have implemented in the wallet. So first and foremost is for retail traders to trade perpetual derivatives denominated in Bitcoin. So you will always stay in Bitcoin and nothing else, but you can trade on USDT, USD, BTC pair, for instance. And this is built on DLCs. So you will be self-custodial also in your trade. So you have your keys, and your seed phrase in this wallet. We also experimented last year with USDP, kind of you heard it, which is the idea of a synthetic USD in Bitcoin. So you can basically go short on Bitcoin if you wanted that, and be stable in the synthetic asset, namely USD, for example, and then actively go away, get rid of the volatility of Bitcoin or the exposure of Bitcoin if you wanted that. And to be frank, there is still payments we have to do in fiat. So there could be some scenarios where this makes sense. For instance, some employees need to get payments in dollar terms. And so that could be a very helpful thing, but also for institutionals, like for hedging some of their risk. And this is also another target of 10-10-1, is to make also it a little bit bigger for, like we call it DLC Connect, which is a web app for bigger traders, institutional traders, and bring them together on the 10-10-1 platform for peer-to-peer trading.
Nice. Thank you, Richard, for doing my job. But anyways, UI, I heard you talking about the good sides of having these possibilities with your Bitcoin and leveraging financial tools with Bitcoin. But I would like to have a quick answer on, in your opinion, is there any downsides? Is there any trade-offs using these tools instead of just holding, or even worse, holding fiat?
I just did a talk that was at Economic University of Bratislava, and my topic was Bitcoin as a conservative investment, where I basically shit talked all the other assets there are. So I think people who are in fiat are taking bigger risks than me, which is of course not a mainstream opinion. So yes, there is risk in holding fiat, and not risk, it's actually certainty, because the central banks, their target is 2% decline in purchasing power, also known as price inflation, and they don't meet this goal, so they perform even worse. So if you hold fiat, you have certainty of losing your purchasing power. So that's why many of us have to gamble with whatever financial investments. Like, I think in most cases, people should not be investors. You know, they shouldn't evaluate in which part of the city to buy their investment real estate, or with the stock of which company they should find, and you know, read the statements and quarterly reports of businesses and invest. You know, most people, like, I'm not an investor. When I trade, I usually lose money. It's not for me. I'm doing something else in my life. But because we have this fiat currency, we have to actually risk our hard-earned money just to keep our purchasing power. With using these tools on Bitcoin, of course, there are risks, and I list them in my book, which there are quite a lot of these risks. Of course, there is the risk of the platform not working. You know, there could be some technical error. I actually lost a few bucks in 10.10.1 because I both closed the channel and deleted the app, so I didn't save my state. So yes, definitely there are risks. Of course, there is a risk of a margin call in both apps. If there's a sudden crash of Bitcoin, let's say to $10,000, you will get a margin call if you don't deal with it in advance. So this is a real risk that needs to be evaluated. You need to think about it. Then there's interest rate risk. Maybe your strategy involves renewing the collateralized loan, or in 10.10.1 terms, you are in a perpetual swap, long on the perpetual swap of BTCUSD, and I don't know if you already have a funding rate, but you will probably have to have a funding rate, because then people will arbitrage you out. So, and you don't know what the interest rate or funding rate is going to be in 1 year. So you need to actually calculate the risk that it will be 20%, or it could be 20%, as chairman said. And then maybe you don't want to stay in the position. So you need a plan. Then there is fiat value risk. And that's the different one than that I explained. So for example, if I use 10.10.1, there is BTCUSD pair currently, but maybe I earn in euros. So what can happen is that USD can go up against the euro, and that would be problematic. For example, if I use Paraguayan Guarani, even Firefish cannot give me loan in Guarani right now, as far as I know. So there's the risk of one fiat currency losing value against dollar, or in the case of Firefish, there are, I think, Czech crowns and euros as well. So this is a problem. We know that USD is a fiat shitcoin, but all the other fiat shitcoins are even worse. So that's a real risk. Then there's KYC and bank risk. So many platforms have to introduce KYC. I think Firefish had to introduce KYC for the loans recently, and I understand that, because Chairman and Martin will not enjoy jail. So they have to do it. Maybe 10.10.1 can also relate. Maybe at some point someone will come knocking at the door, and suddenly your nice non-KYC loan can become not so anonymous and not so private. But there's even with the KYC risk or AML risk, much bigger risk is the fiat side. So you can receive money that is not clean. I don't think that it's real label that you can have on money, because it's universal medium of exchange. So I should not investigate if the money that someone paid me was used to buy cocaine before, or whatever people used it. So, like, I don't think there should be anything. Like, money laundering is not a real crime. It's basically saying that crime investigators were not successful in prosecuting the real crime, so they invented this fake crime to make their job easier. But what could happen, and what is real about this, is that you can receive your money in your bank account. Now I'm talking about Firefish, because 10.10.1 doesn't do bank transfers, it's Bitcoin only. And the bank can say, oh, why are you receiving money from this known money launderer? We are investigating him and now we are going to investigate you. Of course, you can probably talk yourself out of it, but it's a risk. Then there is a risk of network fees. Of course, you don't know how much including a transaction in a block will cost in the future. And then there are unknown risks. I like to include them because there are many risks that will be obvious in the future, but are not obvious now. So of course there are risks. I think it is wise not to use these projects with your whole net worth. I think there should be some you know judgment of okay, I can maybe use 10% of my Bitcoin as a collateral, or maybe for some people it's 5% and not much. So of course there are many risks, but there are risks in life. So
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but when I'm listening to you, you listed the different risks of using financial tools, but I don't see any difference with traditional financial tools that are usually centralized. They have even more risks if we think about it. Let's close this topic real quick with Firefish and Richard from 1010.1. Do you think there is a new trade-off or new risk introduced by this Bitcoin-based finance compared to classic finance or to centralized exchanges and custodial finance?
I'm not having the financial background like the other, so I'm starting. But I just want to quote our founder, and there is simply no free lunch, right? You shift it somewhere. You have to be aware, like Jure listed, what are the different risks. Like self-custody doesn't come for free as well. There is a risk involved, and you need to be aware of what this means, make a backup and whatnot, right? Otherwise, you run risk of losing your funds and nobody will be able to get it back for you. So
but what about the trade-off? I mean, for both projects, I guess that having to ensure the self-custody of your funds implies trade-off while using the applications. It's not as easy as playing around with IOU and credit lines in a centralized exchange or whatever, right?
Oh, certainly the technology is a little bit harder than to do it centralized. But at the same time, I think it should also not get too complicated, right? I mean, that's one of the reasons why we decided to get rid of Lightning for the time being, because we saw that the tech stack got too complicated and too hard to maintain with too many uncertainties on the technology. So it is a responsibility also of the project to don't get it too complicated. But maybe I hand over to Martin and Chairman to talk about the financial differences there as well.
Yeah, what I think is that both financial tools we are talking about, in our case, it's like collateralized lending and derivatives, let's say. And also it applies to Bitcoin. Those are very powerful pieces of technology or very powerful tools. And they can work pretty much in your benefit if used wisely, but they can also harm you if you don't use them wisely. It applies to Bitcoin. I mean, like the fact that you are operating a chunk of wealth by knowing a secret, it's quite a powerful concept that was not in a production before. It gives you a lot of power, but a lot of responsibilities. And I think that same applies for both financial tools we are talking about. So there are definitely risks attached. I think they are inherently similar to the risks attached to the financial tools like built in our traditional financial system. And that's also, I think, reason why the regulators actually didn't allow like public to use derivatives or collateralized lending in a same way as it was used in institutional finance or by high net worth individuals. So definitely there are some risks, but there is a lot of value in these technologies.
Yeah, to conclude that topic, I think that the risks are the same that centralized actors are displaying, but you get rid of most of the risks they are hiding. I don't know how to say it in English, but that they don't show. And also self-custody comes with responsibility, and this can bring UX challenge for the user, but that's the cost of freedom money, right? Anyways, it's been 1 hour that we are live. I think it's time to wrap up gently. But before that, I would love to give a chance to everyone around the table to talk about his work and just quickly share his work. So I started with you, Yuri. I shared your book on the top of the conversation. So if you want to have a call to action to tell people to go and buy it, it's now.
Yes, sure. I would love it. Of course, I only want customers that will find it interesting. So I have actually wrote several books. Another one that is kind of talking about most of these topics is called Cryptocurrencies: Hack Your Way to a Better Life. And I also mentioned the use of derivatives there. So it's also about collateralized lending and different ways how you can actually live the Bitcoin lifestyle. So it's very Bitcoin focused. I explain why you should not buy other coins there and so on. So I highly recommend reading that one. I think the how to harness the value of Bitcoin without having to sell it is more specific if you really want to take a collateralized loan, and that's just what you want to do right now. So you can find links to my books as a pinned tweet in my Twitter profile.
And if you need more advanced accompaniment, you can also buy online courses by Yuri, including videos and that kind of stuff. Yes. Firefish, do you want to bring a call to action on the table? I pinned your announcement of the V3.0 that is out recently, but yeah, give it a go.
Yeah, excellent. Thanks for that. And yeah, as I mentioned, we just launched the public release basically just today. So, you know, feel free joining the platform. It's open for the time being, everybody in European Union, UK and Switzerland. So it doesn't matter which country you're based in, feel free joining. We obviously do have a lot of plans in terms of the expansion into other markets and also expansion of different products. You're right, the Paraguayan Guarani is coming up next week, so get ready. But the platform is very flexible, so really depending on the expansion plans and the traction, we are more than happy to add any other currency that makes sense for the markets we will be serving. So yeah, feel free joining. The platform is up and running. It's very easy to use. And as we always say, never sell your Bitcoin, live of it.
Oh, so. Well, and on the side of 1011, I pinned the post right now. So trading is free of charge. I mean, the fees 1011 take for the order matching, it's free of charge until the halving. And also, if you want to try the app, please note that the coordinator of 1011 is paying half of your mining fees for opening a trading channel, meaning that you will have to pay less than the current fees for a transaction on chain, 50% of it. And after that, you can trade virtually unlimited number of time for free, since every trade are kept off chain. Did I miss something, Richard?
No, I think covered it well.
So feel free to visit our website, comment on our social networks, and give a follow to all the speakers. If we have any question for Yuri, Firefish, or 1011, it's now. So if you want, request the mic and I will let you talk. If not, we are going to wrap up gently. Waiting for someone to ask a question, I got a question for Firefish. If I borrow fiat against Bitcoin and it appears that I have KYC Bitcoin, that's a mistake, by the way, but if I have KYC Bitcoin and I borrow fiat against my KYC Bitcoin, if I don't pay, can I say that's a boating accident? Like, it's a cryptographic boating accident.
Well, it's always a good idea to claim you had a boating accident. In terms of Firefish, like, we don't really care where the Bitcoin is coming from at this moment, to be honest. So yeah.
That was just a joke, saying that if I let my KYC Bitcoin being liquidated, that that's one way to get rid of it. But it was just good fun.
I got you. Yeah, that's some. But in our case, actually, you need to be mindful that that the loan most probably is gonna be of a lower value than your collateral, because the initial LTV is 50%. So it means that you need to deposit twice as much collateral as the value of the loan. So most probably you will be losing more getting your Bitcoin liquidated than what you get.
That's an expensive boating accident. All right. Thank you, everyone, for joining for this space. I hope you have learned something. And if you have any questions, even after the live, feel free to post your questions in the comment. And I'm pretty sure Yuri, Firefish, or us at 1001 would be more than happy to answer it.
Yes, thank you for doing this space. It was very, very nice and very interesting. So thank you for organizing this.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, guys.
It was fun.
Bye. Thank you. See you next time. Ciao, ciao.
Bye. See ya.
Thank you for listening to this recording of Space with 1001 and Firefish and myself. And as usual, links to the course, the book, and the 1001 project and Firefish project are going to be below this podcast as show notes. So you can see it in the description, wherever you listen to this. Thank you again for listening, and until next time, bye bye.